Wisdom is a weapon to ward off destruction. It is an inner fortress which enemies cannot destroy.
Thirukkural 421, 200 BC, ancient India was an advanced knowledge society. Invasions and colonial rule destroyed its institutions and robbed it of its core competence. Its people have been systematically degraded to lower levels of existence. By the time the British left, our youth had lowered their aims and were satisfied earning an ordinary livelihood. India is essentially a land of knowledge, and it must rediscover itself in this aspect. Once this rediscovery is done, it will not require much struggle to achieve the quality of life, strength and sovereignty of a developed nation. Knowledge has many forms, and it is available at many places. It is acquired through education, information, intelligence, and experience. It is available in academic institutions, with teachers, in libraries, in research papers, seminar proceedings and in various organizations and workplaces with workers, managers, in drawings, in process sheets, and on the shop floors. Knowledge, though closely linked to education, comes equally from learning skills such as those possessed by our artists, craftsmen, hakams, vaidyas, philosophers and saints, as also our housewives. Knowledge plays a very important role in their performance and output too. Our heritage and history, the rituals, epics, and traditions that form part of our consciousness, are also vast resources of knowledge as are our libraries and universities. There is an abundance of unorthodox earthy wisdom in our villages. There are hidden treasures of knowledge in our environment, in the oceans, bioreserves and deserts, in the plant and animal life. Every state in our country has a unique core competence for a knowledge society. Knowledge has always been the prime mover of prosperity and power. The acquisition of knowledge has therefore been the thrust area throughout the world. Additionally, in India, there has been a culture of sharing it, not only through the tradition of Guru, Shishya, but also by its spread to neighboring countries through travelers who came to Nalanda and other universities drawn by their reputation as centers of learning. India is endowed with natural and competitive advantages as also certain distinctive competencies. But these are scattered in isolated pockets, and the awareness of these is inadequate. During the last century, the world has changed from being an agricultural society in which manual labor was the critical factor, to an industrial society, where the management of technology, capital and labor provide the competitive advantage. In the 21st century, a new society is emerging, where knowledge is the primary production resource instead of capital and labor. Efficient utilization of this existing knowledge base can create wealth for us in the form of better health, education and other indicators of progress. The ability to create and maintain the knowledge infrastructure, to enhance skills and increase productivity through the exploitation of advances in various fields will be the key factors in deciding the prosperity of this society. Whether a nation qualifies as a knowledge society is judged by how effectively it deals with knowledge creation and knowledge deployment. The knowledge society has two very important components driven by societal transformation and wealth generation. The societal transformation is in respect of education, healthcare, agriculture, and governance. These will lead to employment generation, high productivity and rural prosperity. The task of wealth generation for the nation has to be woven around national competencies. The TIFAC task team has identified core areas that will spearhead our march towards becoming a knowledge society. The areas are information technology, biotechnology, space technology, weather forecasting, disaster management, telemedicine and teleeducation, technologies utilizing traditional knowledge, service sector and infotainment, which is the emerging area resulting from convergence of information and entertainment. These core technologies, fortunately, can be interwoven by it, a sector that took off only due to the enterprising spirit of the young. Thus there are multiple technologies and appropriate management structures that have to work together to generate a knowledge society, with India carving a niche for itself in information technology. The country is uniquely placed to fully capitalize on the opportunity to quickly transform itself into a knowledge society. The methodology of wealth generation in these core areas, and to be able to meet an export target set at $50 billion by the year 2008, especially through the IT sector, is a subject that is currently under discussion. Also being discussed is how best to simultaneously develop the capability to generate information technology products worth $30 billion domestically, to pump in for societal transformation. I am glad that the Planning Commission has taken a lead in generating a roadmap for transforming India into a knowledge society. I had the opportunity to be the chairman of the steering committee set up for this task. Evolving suitable policy and administrative procedures, changes in regulatory methods, identification of partners, and, most important, creation of young and dynamic leaders are the components that have to be put in place. In order to generate wealth, which is the second component for establishing a knowledge society, it is essential that simultaneously a citizen-centric approach to shaping of business policy, user-driven technology generation and intensified industry, lab, academia linkages have also to be established. Becoming a knowledge superpower by the year 2010 is a very important mission for the nation. While a knowledge society has a two-dimensional objective of societal transformation and wealth generation, a third dimension emerges if India is to transform itself into a knowledge superpower. This is knowledge protection, and it entails a tremendous responsibility. It is very important that our communication network and information generators are protected from electronic attacks through surveillance and monitoring. There should be a focused approach to intellectual property rights and related issues, and our ancient knowledge and culture too are part of our resource base and need to be protected as such. In 1960, the agriculture sector employed in part, or in full, 74% of the population. This came down to 62% in 1992, and is expected to further fall to 50% by 2010, though the demand of agricultural products will double by then. Higher productivity and better post-harvest management will have to compensate for the manpower reduction in the farming and agricultural products sector. There was a function in Chennai organized by the Manipal Academy of Higher Education who felicitated me along with the father of the Green Revolution, C. Subramaniam, an eminent lawyer N. A. Palkavala. After the function, I shared with the 90-year-old Subramaniam his vision of a second Green Revolution. He told me about his dream of setting up a national agro foundation that would develop hybrid seeds. His foundation would adopt small and marginal farmers and provide them with laboratory facilities for soil testing and access to information on the weather and markets so that they could earn more through enhanced yields and better prices for what they produced. He aimed at bringing 1 million farmers under the scheme. Visionaries don't age. On another occasion, I was talking to the students of Dr. Mahalingam College of Engineering and Technology at Pollachi, near Coimbatore. Dr. N. Mahalingam, a great industrialist and academician, was sitting with me. He was telling me how the country can generate wealth through agro, chemical and textile industries. Amazed by his achievements in establishing industries and educational institutions, I asked him, "Sir, what is your next mission?" As I said this, I realized I was asking this question of a person who was about 80 years old. Dr. Mahalingam replied, "I have analyzed the Tamil scripts used in the last Sangam, which was 2,500 years ago. Now I would like to do research on the Tamil scripts used in the first Sangam, which existed 5,000 years ago." It was another reminder to me that visionaries don't age. In the case of industry, in 1960, 11% of the population was engaged in small-scale and large-scale industries. The trend continued with 11% even in 1992. However, it has to increase to 25% in 2010, bearing in mind the envisaged GDP growth and increased competition as trade restrictions are lifted under the WTO. The pattern of employment will take a new shape. Employment in the service or knowledge industry has increased from 15% in 1960 to 27% in 1992, and it will further increase to 50% in view of infrastructure maintenance areas and its sector and entertainment demands. This big change will demand more trained personnel. Our leaders in commerce and industry have to prepare themselves for the transformation. The fact that there is net migration from the villages to cities shows the disparities in living standards between the two. Ideally, both rural and urban areas should be equally attractive with no net migration either way. Near zero net rural, urban migration is a mark of development. How can we achieve that happy balance? Rural development is the only solution. This means providing rural areas with the amenities that are currently available only in cities. This would generate employment on the same scale and at the same level as in the cities and the rural areas too. The other challenge would be to provide these benefits at a small fraction of the financial, social, cultural, and ecological costs the cities have to bear. It is the expectation that this combination of generating employment bearing in mind environmental factors will make rural areas as attractive as cities are, if not even more attractive. Then, rural development may be expected to prevent, if not actually reverse, rural-urban migration. Hence, PURA aims at integrated physical, electronic knowledge and economic connectivity. Experience in India has demonstrated that the true handicap suffered by rural areas is poor connectivity and little else. Linking together a loop of villages by a ring road and high-quality transport may rectify that lacuna. Villages thus linked would also provide a large enough market to support a variety of services, which they would not be able to do individually. The ring road and the transport service together can convert the linked villages immediately into a virtual town with a market of tens of thousands of people. Such an area, which would also possess state-of-the-art telecommunication connectivity, will have a high probability of attaining rapid growth by setting up a virtuous cycle, more connected people attracting more investment, and more investment attracting even more people, and so on. Basically, this involves selecting a ring of villages, connecting the villages on the ring by establishing a high-quality transport and telecommunication system, encouraging reputed specialists to locate schools, hospitals and other social services around the ring, marketing this well-serviced space to attract industry and commerce, and internet connectivity. The model envisaged a habitat designed to improve the quality of life in rural places, and made special suggestions to remove urban congestion. Naturally, our most intractable urban problem is that of congestion. Efficient supply of water and effective waste disposal in every locality are the paramount civic needs. There is a minimum size below which a habitat is not viable, and not competitive with the existing congested city. At the same time, the existing congested city is not economical compared to a new town once a minimum size of expansion is crossed. As against a conventional city that is, say, rectangular in shape and measuring 10 kilometers by 6 kilometers, the model considers an annular ring-shaped town integrating minimum 8 to 10 villages of the same 60 square kilometers area, and the same access distance of 1 kilometer to transport arteries. It needs only one transportation route of a distance half that needed for the rectangular-shaped city, so frequency of transportation will be doubled, having waiting times. It has zero number of junctions and needs only one route, as against 8 needed for the rectangular plan, so people will no longer need to change from one line to another. That saves transport time. Further, as all traffic is concentrated on one single route, high-efficiency mass transportation systems become economical even for a comparatively small population. This cuts costs substantially, and is more convenient for the people. Rural development is an essential need for transforming India into a knowledge superpower, and high-bandwidth rural connectivity is the minimum requirement to take education and healthcare to the rural areas. Roadmaps for development of certain areas have been generated, and we have to work on their realization. There was an invitation by Mr. Ratan Tata, chairman of the Tata Group of Companies, to visit Telco at Pune, particularly to witness the challenge of designing, developing and manufacturing in the country a fully Indian car, the Indica. The prospect of the visit excited me. I thought I would get an answer to some questions that I have been asked on many occasions. In 1980, when our team in ISRO launched the satellite launch vehicle and put Rohini into low Earth orbit, it was a big event for the nation. On January 4, 2001, when I saw the first prototype fighter aircraft, the Light Combat Aircraft, LCA, designed and developed indigenously by the Aeronautical Development Agency, ADA, taking to the skies, again India was described as one of the few countries to have acquired capabilities in this sophisticated field. This is the result of intensified networking between R&D laboratories, industry, academic institutions, users and the government. Ratan Tata told me during the visit about his vision of making India a global player in the automobile sector. To implement his vision, he decided to acquire car manufacturing units from many countries, rather than set them up here at considerable expense in terms of money and time. He looked towards manufacturing five times the present levels, so that they could graduate to being globally competitive. This dot is a beautiful idea. I would add that Indian industrial complexes should become dot consortia as a first step, and then envision becoming multinational companies. I and my team are invited by a number of scientific, industrial, academic and management institutions to share our experiences in the pursuit of some of the national tasks I have mentioned. One question that came up during my interaction with students in Mumbai rings in my mind even now. Dr. Kalam, we are very happy to see that India can build and produce its own SLVS and satellites, its own strategic missiles as also nuclear weapons and power stations. Can you tell me when India will design and produce its own passenger car with an Indian engine? When I was going through the design, manufacture of component, sub-assembly, integration and testing plants at Telco, and was told that the company is producing about 60,000 cars annually, I was reminded of this question. I was not only witnessing the answer to it, but also the technological strength of our nation. I had another opportunity to see a concept take shape when Wipro invited me to participate in a function to mark the commissioning of a mobile heart care clinic at Bangalore in October 2000. This was a collaborative effort of Wipro GE, Care Foundation and CleanseAids. My friend Arun Tiwari and I provided the system concept for the project. It was a great experience for me. After the inauguration, I visited the Wipro GE Center that builds specialized medical equipment using advanced technologies. As soon as I entered, a young man approached me and pinned the national flag on my shirt. I shook his hand and asked him, "Young man, will you stay and work for this country?" He replied, "Dr. Kalam, I am in the profession of working on medical gadgets that are used for diagnosis. I am committed to a profession in which one tries to remove pain. I am needed here." I was delighted by his answer. The center itself struck me as a positive collaboration between two nations in the field of healthcare. After the program, Azim Premji, who heads Wipro, accompanied me to the DRDO guest house. On the way, he explained how he was trying to assist elementary schools in Karnataka so that more children could be brought into the classroom. As we were having tea at the guest house, I asked him, "How has Wipro reached its high stature in the business world?" Premji gave a remarkable answer. "Dr. Kalam, I can say there are three aspects that come to my mind. 1. sweat for generations and the hard work of teams. 2. In Wipro we work for the customer's delight. 3. A bit of luck. The third point will not be of any consequence if the first two aspects are not achieved. In Wipro, what we have tried to do is wealth generation with social concern. A common thread runs through the experience of these institutions. It is that we can deliver high technology systems in spite of control and denial regimes. The presence of a competitive environment, networking capabilities, wealth generation with social concern, and above all ignited minds of the young. These are all very important ingredients for building a knowledge society. Maharishi Patanjali said in the Yoga Sutra, apostrophe when you are inspired by some great purpose, some extraordinary project, all your thoughts break their bounds. Your mind transcends limitations, your consciousness expands in every direction, and you find yourself in a new, great, and wonderful world. Dormant forces, faculties, and talents become alive, and you discover yourself to be a greater person by far than you ever dreamed yourself to be. That is something addressed to all of us. It is the people of a nation who make it great. By their effort, the people in turn, become important citizens of their great country. Ignited minds are the most powerful resource on earth, and the 1 billion minds of our nation are indeed a great power waiting to be tapped.